The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
On today's show, we're continuing our in-depth coverage of the Vancouver City Council's historic motion calling for an exemption to possession laws of drug supply. City Council passed the motion late last week, and Sarah Blythe is a co-founder of the Vancouver Overdose Prevention Site. She was also a former elected City Park Board commissioner before that. Here's what she has to say about the announcement. Hello, Sarah. Great to have you here on The Pulse. We've been covering a lot of issues around Overdose Prevention Site and decriminalization and the war on drugs since our program launched in March, but really great to have you on the show with us directly.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the time that you guys are having me on.
Yeah. So before we talk about this sort of historic motion at City Council, I just wanted to start off just talking about what it's like at the Overdose Prevention Site right now. I know things were pretty wild over the course of this pandemic. I wondered, where are things at now?
Yeah. So right now, there was a time when the first wave of the pandemic happened, and a lot of people sort of went back to their homes or back to the alleys. They didn't really know what to do. And now we're starting to see people again, because now the message is you need to be together no matter what, because drug users will most likely die of an overdose and not of COVID, just because of what the statistics are saying. So keeping people together, making sure they're safe, making sure they're wearing masks, making sure they're careful, with their interactions, following protocols, that sort of thing. It makes it a lot more challenging, but also at the same time, keeping people safe from COVID and also safe from overdoses is really important. So we'll be there as we are open probably all year long through the Christmas holidays and everything else.
Yeah, we were just talking to Guy Felicella yesterday in our program, and he was sort of worried about the holidays coming up because it's a particularly stressful time that can bring up a lot of trauma for people.
Yeah, it always is. Thankfully, we were able to fundraise some funds to have Santa and some elves and some Christmas stuff going on. Some people from the community will be the elves and Santa, and we're gonna have lights and Christmas presents and trees and things like that. So we're gonna try and make it as fun as possible. But yeah, it's a tough time for a lot of people. It's not my favorite time of year either. So I mean, not everybody enjoys it. It's the time where trauma did happen in some families. It's not always the most fun time of year for everyone, but it is for some people. It's kind of like Valentine's Day. Not everybody enjoys it.
Yes. And for many people, that can sometimes lead to relapses or re-upping your dose or whatever it needs to take to get through it. And unfortunately, that puts one in danger these days.
Yeah. And I mean, there's going to be no family occasions anyway right now, really. I mean, your really small circle bubble of family will be able to be together, and it's going to be tough. It's tough on people who have children. It's tough on children who don't get to see their parents. It's tough on a lot of people. So, I don't know if it'll be any tougher this year. I think because there's less services, it'll probably be a lot tougher this year. There's a lot of services that can't be open because of COVID, and a lot of services have shut down. So, people aren't going to get the Christmas that they normally do down in the downtown east side.
I'm really glad that you've got a Santa and some elves and putting up some decorations, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, we know how to make Christmas fun. We have fun down here. I enjoy Christmas in the downtown east side. It's always good. We make, bring some sort of potluck situation together, and this year we're going to be a little bit more careful because of COVID. So it's going to be COVID-friendly Santas that you keep your distance from with a mask on, and Santa will be wearing a beard that's probably a mask or something like that. I don't know.
So some creative. Yeah. With the second wave, have you noticed a change in the patterns of who's visiting or how much?
Not really. I mean, there was an immediate, as soon as COVID hit, there was an immediate, reduction in coming to our site. But now we're starting to, looking at our to where we were. So I think people are seeing that, you know, there is a safe way to come to Overdosed Insights. We have a big outdoor area where people can outdoors with a tent and be away, you know, 8x8x8 away from people. So they, you know, they can safely use away from other folks and be, you know, if something happens, we can help them out in a safe manner. So, you know, we've obviously had to adjust. In the first part of the COVID crisis, we didn't, you know, you don't really know exactly, okay, this has never happened before. This is totally terrible. And but, you know, we're going to have to adjust to it. So, you know, as you adjust, things get better, right? So it's, things have improved and they're getting better.
One thing that I know has changed is there were a lot of workshops offered last year and, you know, that were really ramping up to get more people trained in how to use naloxone. I'm wondering, is there any way that people can still do that? I know that pharmacies give that out, but the trainings were kind of pivotal for a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, we've considered doing some videos. There have been videos in the past. It might be actually good now that I think of it, just to do something online, like an online video webinar on how to use Narcan. That would be quite simple, as long as other people had a chance to get the Narcan kits. But, you know, there's ways to train people. We've been asked, you know, there's a business street had to deal with an overdose, and they didn't have Narcan, and they called the ambulance. It was quite scary for them. So I've just been contacted that group to do some training, and there's a safe way to do it in small groups, and we continue to do that as we can, as people ask.
Well, I wanted to talk about the City Council resolution, and it's particularly interesting to talk to you, not just being on the front lines as a co-founder of the overdose prevention site, but you were in city politics. You were an elected official with the Park Board before that. What does this mean to you?
Well, for me and the folks that I work with on the front lines, the decriminalization just means that more protection for people in the downtown east side, and folks not being harassed by police officers for having drugs, small amounts of drugs. You know, it's gotten a lot better, but at the end of the day, it can be used by police to add on these charges to other things to make things worse for people. And if they end up with a lot of charges, it's really hard to pull your life back together. So, I mean, at the end of the day, just, you know, having this as a real thing, having a law in place that criminalizes people and the ability to use it, some police will use it regardless because it's the law. So you have to really get not the law in order for police really to understand that that's just not their job to do. So, you know, and that goes on with, you know, future generations. So I think it's very important to change the law, and we should really be dealing with this as a health issue. And I think the VPD understands that from what they're saying, but I think it has to trickle down to the front lines a bit better, because what, you know, what we're seeing on the front line, sometimes we see things that match up with what they're saying. I mean, sometimes these things take time, and, you know, we're willing to be as soon as we can be, but at the time, the law, changing the law will be the thing that makes, you know, makes a big difference, I think. And then argument about what is what, it's just the law. That's how it is. So it's important for folks that have been criminalized so much in their lives. In a lot of ways, it's just a health crisis, and people need, you know, they need safe access to medication. They need other things. They need rehab if they want it. They need, you know, things that can help them, you know, make their lives more comfortable and better, just like everyone else. Because basically, with people not overdosing, people with safe supply, their lives will improve by a lot that we've seen, and that will improve the lives of other people as well. People won't have to steal. They won't get you know, in the ambulance. They'll be, you know, there's a lot of happen steps, which I think governments are obviously afraid to do because of the stigma, right? So and what they think, feel that public perception should be on it. But, you know, really at the end of the day, if they do the right thing, good things are going to happen for everyone. And they should ones at all levels of government to be able to explain it to the public what needs to be done.
Now, I wanted to ask you if you could put your former elected municipal official hat on and say, how are you surprised by this going through? I mean, it was unanimous. It seems to have been quite a groundswell.
There was a lot of work done by folks from the community, and the city did, you know, asked, what do you want as a community, drug users? What do you need that will help you? And this was one of the priorities. So, you know, if you ask, that's what they wanted. And so that's listening to the community. And so that, you know, I think it takes guts to be able to move forward on these kind of things and help people. And it will take that kind of guts, all three levels of government, know how we'll ever do it.
You were just saying you were hopeful about this.
Yeah, I'm hopeful about this. I think that all levels of government really need to work together. And if for the right reasons, you know, when they do the right things for the right reason to help people with this crisis, it's going to turn out good for everyone in the end. So, there, you know, it might be challenging, but I think they'll find that they get a lot of support, and a lot of people really want to see the end of this. It's not a partisan issue, where, as in, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, people are dying from every political stripe. At a really large level, 5 people a day. So, you know, parents are losing their children. People are losing their friends and family. It's very terrible times for people. And really, you know, not enough's been done. And it's terrible. You know, today I looked on Facebook and I saw 2 other people that I knew that have passed away. And to be honest, it's just totally preventable if we would just, you know, really step it up. At a certain point, the government needs to be held responsible if they don't do enough, really.
Now, the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, since you have experience at the municipal level, is just how little power cities actually have. Like, once again, this is another motion, although historic, that urges the federal government to do something. And I guess that's just the nature of the game.
Yeah, I mean, from what I hear, you know, some are just sort of virtue signaling, you know, just to sort of say this is where we stand, although we can't do anything about it. But I feel like in talking to people that there has been some groundwork done on this, and it's not just that. So I feel like, you know, that the federal government has had conversations with the city. I don't exactly know what, but I feel like that the groundwork's been done here. So I feel confident that something will be done. And, you know, I mean, I've put forward letters that I knew that would not really produce anything in the past on park board myself. So just to try and push people into doing something. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But this, I think, has a bit more support than that. So fingers crossed. I'm really hoping that the feds come through for us on this. They should, because it really should be ashamed of themselves with how many people died. And they got to do something that, you know, something big has to happen here.
And as we've heard on our program, it's the current system is not working and is deadly. So whatever might go wrong with any potential change or attempt at this, it's, you know, the status quo is pretty horrible.
Well, at the end of the day, this is what drug users have asked. Those are the folks that are dying. So at the end of the day, you know, what you're doing, what the public has asked you to do, that are being most affected by this. So there's really, you know, it's time to just help them out and try to do something right, and take their word for what needs to be done. And I think that good things will happen for the future. And, you know, the war on drugs obviously totally failed, and people are dying at alarming rates. They're being put in jail. They're getting criminal records where, you know, they're stuck for their life. Once you get a criminal record, you can't travel. You can't get a job doing certain things, and it really limits your life. And then what do you have to do? You have drug dealing. You have, you know, things that might not necessarily want to do. So this can really help people have other choices in life. And I think that that's really a big thing for being able to change your life. I've helped people get rid of their criminal records in the past, and it's not very easy. And so it's really important to be able to move past some of these things, because all of these things make lives more difficult, right? If you got a criminal record, you got health issues, you got other things, you know, getting a job, and it just everything becomes sort of more difficult and unattainable, and including housing, right? So you need all of the things to kind of go right to be able to contribute.
What do you make of Prime Minister Trudeau's recent statements that decriminalization is not a silver bullet, and that's why he's not moved ahead with that so far?
Well, I mean, I don't think it is a silver bullet. I don't think anyone thinks that it's a silver bullet. I mean, we need safe supply, we need housing, we need rehabilitation on demand for people. So, I mean, in some ways he's right about that, but we need all of the things. It's not one way to fix it, right? There's a lot of things that are wrong. So, but it's a step forward, and I think we have to chip away at all of the components and get to a point where, you know, we're doing a lot more for people. So, but I don't think it's an excuse. It's not like all or nothing, right? I mean, you have to do some things, and this is something that he can do. So he needs to start doing stuff, because otherwise other people are going to die, and it'll come down to him. And it's not necessarily whether he gets elected or not. It's just about how do you sleep at night with all these people dying under your watch. So, and I mean, government failure to deal with this has really made it so that more people are dying at all levels of government. So at a certain point, I don't know. I certainly wouldn't be able to sleep at night thinking that I could do more. And I'm hoping that that rings true with, you know, everyone else.
I wanted to ask about Safe Supply program that BC brought in at the start of the pandemic and has modified a few times. It looks like there's some more changes coming, potentially expanding the list of drugs on that list if they can get them supplied. What are you hearing on the ground in terms of, are people accessing this program? Are they finding it easy to get what they need?
You know, to be honest, everything's kind of a slow start. I'd like to see things go a lot faster than they are going. I mean, I am seeing people access medication, but you know, at the end of the day, with COVID and everything's kind of feels like things have slowed down even before they got started. So, you know, I'd like to see really everybody know how to get Safe Supply, where to go, demand it from their doctors, have their doctors prescribe, get the training that's needed. You know, in some ways, I'm sort of tired of hearing about it, and I just want to see something happen very drastic so that we don't have to deal with people dying all the time.
What needs to improve about the program?
Just making sure that it's available to everyone and in a very simple, easy way, just as available to people as using drugs, or buying drugs on the street. You know, it's got to be that simple. So there's got to be a way to roll it out that it's very simple, very easy, and getting, you know, more people able to do it.
And presumably more drugs that people are actually using, because we don't right now have heroin in there.
Yeah, heroin in there. I mean, ideally there'd be fentanyl in there at this point as well, a safe supply of that. I mean, people may frown on that a little bit, but the thing is that people are using fentanyl now, and you know, if you can take fentanyl safely if you were able to know how much you're taking. So it, like, getting people off of this stuff that they don't know what it is, it's totally garbage in a lot of ways sometimes. It's in all drugs, and it's kind of terrifying, really.
Well, we just had these 7 overdoses at a party in the West End just from MDMA.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So we're seeing that when you're testing drugs. Like, we test drugs at our overdose prevention site, so we're seeing the different things that are in drugs, and sometimes it's okay. And thankfully, you know, we see something come in, and then, you know, if the dealer's sitting there in the alley, we can march out there and say, what the hell is this? Get rid of it. It's going to kill people, right? So testing your drugs is really important. No matter what drug it is, you never know what it is unless you've gotten it tested with a spectrometer. So making sure you do that. never use alone. I mean, these people didn't die because they were together. And in some ways, the thing that you've got to do for the overdose crisis is the opposite of what you do in the COVID crisis, which is be together. So if you're going to do drugs, be together and make sure that you're with someone and that you stagger using, you test the drugs. If you can, one person uses once, the next person uses after that, that kind of thing. So, and, you know, these people lived because they were together and someone was able to call 911. And so that's good. If they used alone, they might be all dead but right now.
What's with the Lifeguard app? I've heard about this being used more and more.
Yeah, there's a Be Safe app and a Lifeguard app, and you can use while someone's online with you. And then, you know, if you don't hear from them, then you can call 911, which is a great thing. I mean, there's nothing better than having a person with Narcan beside you, or even using an overdose prevention site like what we have, because we can see a person overdosing immediately, deal with the issue and get them some Narcan and oxygen and all the things that they need.
Without delay, because that can cause long-term problems.
Yeah, delay can cause death. It can cause long-term problems. You know, minutes are so important when it comes to breathing, obviously, right? So you can die within minutes. So, I mean, obviously, you do whatever you know, it's better to do that than not do anything. It's better to be at an overdose prevention site. It's better to have someone with you with Narcan. There's all kinds of things that you can do so that you don't die. Using alone at home because you just don't feel like you don't want to see someone, or you just are tired and you don't think about it too much is not a good idea. That's really where people are dying. People in bathrooms, at parties, you know, things like that. Just terrible situations. I've heard about a lot of things that I really, it's just sad to hear one story after another from mothers about how their children died. And you know, hearing about young people, you know, my son had a friend that died that was when he was 15 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, it's just, how do you even explain that to young people? It's not good. You know, it's terrible. So, it is affecting young people. It really is. When we were young, or when I was young, probably older than you, but when I was young, I mean, you could kind of experiment and have fun and get wasted and like do a line of something or whatever and wake up in the morning and whatever. It was just crazy times, right? But you can't do that anymore. It's just not like that anymore with drugs, right?
Before we let you go, Sarah, is there anything else you wanted to let our listeners know in the Downtown East Side?
Just be safe. You know, if you're at Christmas time, you're feeling lonely and you're using drugs, you can always come and see us. And we're around for people, and we can help you with resources. We've become kind of a one-stop shop because there's a lot of places closed. We have food donations and things like that. So,
and you got your drug testing spectrometer. What's your address again?
It's 58 East Hastings.
Right. Thank you so much. Great to have your time, and I hope you wish you the best going forward.
Yeah. You too. Call anytime.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Sarah Blythe. She's founder of the Vancouver Overdose Prevention Site and a former elected park board commissioner of the city of Vancouver. You can find their website at vancityoverdoseprevention.com or drop in at 58 East Hastings. Please wear a mask. And you can download the Lifeguard app at the App Store or Google Play. It's operated by the Provincial Health Services Authority.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.